Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 4th. Experts discuss air quality issues. EPA notification of non-attainment baffles TCEQ, other officials, since data shows area exceeds air quality standards. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Notification from the Environmental Protection Agency that it is considering redesignating the Permian Basin as being in non-attainment of national ambient air quality standards for ozone has sent shockwaves from the Permian Basin throughout the state. An area is considered to be in non-attainment when it exceeds standards, in this case, 70 parts per billion under current regulations, over a certain period of time. The Permian Basin Coalition hosted a luncheon Wednesday, sponsored by the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance and Permian Basin Petroleum Association, to discuss the issue. James Beecham, president of MOTRAN, said after the notification was released, MOTRAN decided to gather some data to better understand the EPA's concerns. He told the audience they began with Midland County, setting up monitors at Midland International Airport, near Midland Memorial's West Campus, and at Farm to Market Road 1788 and County Road 60. The monitors tested the air for 15 minutes, taking samples at 10-second intervals. The highest score was 41 at the airport, he said, well below the 70 parts per billion standard. Bobby Janica, one of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's three commissioners, said his agency is not aware of any data showing that any of the Permian Basin airshed exceeds target levels and requires additional monitoring. His concern, Janica told the audience, is that the agency could gather new, strong data showing the area is in compliance, but it would be rejected by the EPA, which would only consider data before a certain time. That means, he explained, is that while Texas and the TCEQ can argue that the EPA is basing its actions on data primarily from New Mexico, and that its status shows the Permian in compliance, those arguments would still be rejected. Donna Huff, TCEQ's Deputy Director, Air Quality Division, said ozone monitors have been set up in Hobbs and Carlsbad in New Mexico, and several in the El Paso area, but none in the West Texas portion of the region, and they aren't required due to a lack of high-density population. Ozone monitors in Hobbs had a reading of 70 ppb, Carlsbad had a reading of 69 ppb, and Carlsbad Caverns a reading of 73 ppb through the first two quarters of 2022. She echoed Janica's concerns over how discretionary the decision to redesignate the Permian Basin as in non-attainment by citing communications between Governor Greg Abbott and EPA Administrator Michael Reagan. The governor had written Reagan in June, expressing concerns the designation would jeopardize Permian Basin oil and gas production, which constitutes about 40% of U.S. oil production and about 15% of U.S. gas production. Reagan responded in July that the EPA is still considering redesignation. Redesignating the Permian Basin as being in non-attainment is purely at the discretion of Reagan, which raised concerns among the elected officials attending the luncheon. Quote, there is a strong legal basis for challenging this EPA action, State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa told the reporter Telegram. Quote, this is not based on science. There's no air monitoring on the Texas side of the Permian. This is a house of cards that weren't built on a strong foundation, end quote. State Representative Tom Craddock of Midland said legislators can monitor what is being done and do all they can to push back on actions they feel are unnecessary or detrimental. Quote, we can support litigation filed in court and help coordinate meetings like this and groups like this so we're all united, Craddock said. Unity is more productive than various groups going in different directions. Kevin Sparks, state senator-elect, said it's important to maintain the integrity of state agencies like the CCEQ and Railroad Commission and the quality people who work at those agencies. Quote, I believe in using good data and science to push back against federal action, Sparks said. To me, from what I've heard, it's clear Texas has to push back against the federal government again. Huff said the added cost to industries and cities to meet attainment standards if the area is redesignated as non-attainment could force cities to either find more resources for development projects or forego projects. That is why Midland City Council member Lori Blong said it's important to pay attention to this issue so the city doesn't find itself in the position of having to choose between developing road infrastructure or oil and gas development. Non-attainment could restrict our ability to grow, she said. And the potential consequences are not short-lived. There's 20-plus years of potential impact, end quote. Long continued, quote, if we can use whatever influence we have to stop EPA overreach, the time is now. We want to get ahead of this and not be in the position of fighting it after the fact, end quote. Pfluger preaches to the choir during town hall in Odessa. Congressman says, energy security is national security. The story was written by Ben Schaefer. Congressman August Pfluger, Republican from San Angelo, was preaching to the choir Tuesday during a town hall meeting in Odessa, and that meant talking about energy. Energy threats in the Middle East and China, as well as inflation, were the major speaking points during the event at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in Odessa. But the San Angelo Republican opened with claims that President Joe Biden was making good on his declaration of war on the fossil fuel industry when he took office in 2020. Quote, he assaulted the industry by canceling the Keystone Pipeline, by failing to allow permitting and drilling on federal lands, by using things like the Endangered Species Act to weaponize against producers and also farmers and ranchers, said Pfluger, a member of the Energy, Climate, and Conservation Task Force. Pfluger remarked that he was preaching to the choir of Odessa locals when he said that the Permian Basin has changed the world through its energy production. Quote, we have the largest secure supply of oil and gas in the entire world right here under our feet, said the first-term representative. Quote, it makes me mad when I see the president go to Saudi Arabia and ask OPEC to produce more when we can do it right here, end quote. Pfluger then rolled out examples of next year's agenda for the Energy, Climate, and Conservation Task Force. His energy sector plans include building out the infrastructure necessary to use resources in West Texas to regain domestic energy dominance. Quote, those are pipelines, those are refineries, those are LNG export terminals, he said. Those are allowing producers in both the federal and in private lands to do what they do best and to do it responsibly, end quote. When asked about strategies he's using to help push energy-related legislation in the nation's capital, he shared that he invited both Midland and Odessa's Chambers of Commerce to come to Washington, D.C. a few months ago to walk the halls of Congress and meet with Republicans and Democrats so his colleagues could see firsthand the people and industries that energy policies affect. Pfluger also remarked that when Russian President Vladimir Putin sends oil to countries in Europe, it is 40% dirtier than the oil produced in the local area. He then went into detail about legislation that he pioneered titled Midland Over Moscow. Quote, "That piece of legislation says we need an energy security plan that takes advantage of our resources and unleashes American innovation, and it delivers that at an inexpensive and in a reliable manner," he remarked. The former U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel then asked the veterans in the room to identify themselves. He wondered why the United States has a national security strategy that uses resources and taxpayer dollars to fund the military, but doesn't do the same when it comes to energy security. Quote, "Energy security is national security," he said. "I am so passionate about this. If we are dependent on China or Russia or Iran or North Korea, Venezuela for our energy gains, then we are a weaker country and we are susceptible and vulnerable to any of the bad things that could happen to us," end quote. Pfluger responded to an audience question about the sale of U.S. oil reserves to China by saying, quote, "I want to know what the cost is going to be to the American taxpayer. We bought that oil at a certain price that was filled up in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and it wasn't $100. It may have been $40 or $50, but I want to know what the cost is going to be to refill it. By the way, that SPR is not to be used for a political emergency. It's to be used for a real emergency, and I believed it was used for a political emergency," end quote. Pfluger on foreign policy, economy. A concerned audience member brought up Chinese entities purchasing land in the United States, which Pfluger claimed has happened near Laughlin Air Force Base in Val Verde County and in North Dakota. He responded, stating that the Chinese government doesn't allow Americans to purchase land in China, and wondered why America has allowed Chinese businesses to do so here, especially near military bases. Since Al-Qaeda leader and 9/11 coordinator Ayman al-Zawahiri was killed by a U.S. drone strike on July 31st, Pfluger commented briefly on the Middle East. He said he fought against ISIS in the Air Force, and he's glad the government and military were able to eliminate al-Zawahiri, but it most likely means that there is an issue brewing in the Middle East. Quote, "That is an area that is still fertile for terrorists to use and train and to regroup," he said. "Our nation's economy is the best way to defend ourselves against potential threats from other countries," according to Pfluger. "Whether it's the threat of what Russia has done to Ukraine, China invading Taiwan, the threat environment is more complex than it's ever been," he told Odessa. Quote, "What we do here in this district is a national security issue. The energy we produce, the agriculture we produce, those are issues of national security," he claimed. He said that while 9.1% was the most recent inflation report on a consumer price index, it is much higher than that in reality. Quote, "Gas prices are up over 50%, groceries are up anywhere from 10 to 15, 20 to 30%, he said. "Electric bills are up. One in five Americans, it's estimated, will get a disconnect notice this year," end quote. Abel Hanger honors Hospice of Midland. Recognition comes as hospice starts palliative medical care. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Abel Hanger Foundation awarded its Abel Innovation Award this year to Hospice of Midland. Abel Hanger offers the Innovation Award for grants to nonprofits to advance the mission, the efficiency, and the effectiveness of their organization. Abel Hanger reported that Hospice of Midland will start offering palliative medical care in the community. Palliative care, is care given to improve the quality of life of patients who have serious or life-threatening disease, such as cancer, according to Hospice of Midland. Quote, palliative care is an approach to care that addresses the person as a whole, not just their disease, Hospice reported in an information video about its palliative care initiative. Quote, the goal is to prevent or treat as early as possible the symptoms and side effects of the disease and its treatment, in addition to any related psychological, social, and spiritual problems, end quote. Hospice reports that, quote, community-based palliative care will, over time, increase the number of patients served, allowing specialized healthcare access to those who were previously waiting for their health to deteriorate so they can qualify for hospice care. The program will decrease hospital readmission rates, thereby reducing costs while possibly increasing revenue for Hospice of Midland, Hospice reported. When fully implemented, this program will increase the number of patients served, life prolongation, improve management of symptoms, enhance advanced care planning, and provide additional support for at-home care, end quote. Hospice stated there currently is no community-based palliative care in the Permian Basin. Quote, it truly will be quite a benefit for our community, and we want people to know what they are doing, according to Abel Hanger officials.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, August 4th. DPS say two die in fiery crash south of Midland. Two people are dead after a two-vehicle collision Wednesday morning on State Highway 349 south of Midland, according to Department of Public Safety officials. DPS reported that a 2022 Dodge Ram 2500 failed to yield the right-of-way at the intersection of County Road 140 and State Highway 349, 3 miles south of Midland. It was there that the 2009 Freightliner truck tractor towing a trailer and traveling south struck the driver's side of the Dodge Ram. Both vehicles came to rest in the East Barrow ditch of State Highway 349, DPS reported. The Dodge Ram burned completely and the front end of the Freightliner burned. James William Featherston, 38, of Oglesby, was driving the Dodge, and Jose Alvarez Castillo, 55, of Midland, drove the Freightliner. The accident took place around 5 a.m. IDEA opened school year in Midland and Odessa. On Wednesday, IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin welcomed nearly 1,800 students for the 2022-23 school year at both campuses, IDEA Travis in Midland and IDEA Yukon in Odessa. IDEA Travis will offer 8th grade for the first time this year and serve roughly 1,100 students. Students in grades 3 through 8 will have the opportunity to participate in intramural sports. Additionally, Travis students living within MISD's boundaries can also try out to play competitive sports at their home attendance zone junior high school. We are so excited to continue growing our campuses to serve our students, says Bethany Solis, executive director for IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin. We are committed to providing a safe, rigorous, and fun learning environment where students thrive on the road to and through college. For more information on IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin, visit ideapublicschools.org/regions/Permian-Basin. EPA announces flights to look for methane in Permian Basin. By Michael Besseker and Helen Wiffering, Associated Press, Washington. The Environmental Protection Agency says it will conduct helicopter overflights to look for methane super emitters in the nation's largest oil and gas producing region. EPA's Region 6 headquarters in Dallas issued a news release about a new enforcement effort in the Permian Basin on Monday, saying the flights would occur within the next 2 weeks. The announcement came 4 days after the Associated Press published an investigation that showed 533 oil and gas facilities in the region are emitting excessive amounts of methane, named the company's most responsible. Colorless and odorless, methane is a potent greenhouse gas that traps 83 times more heat in the atmosphere over a 20-year period than an equivalent amount of carbon dioxide. EPA spokesman Tim Carroll said the timing of the agency's announcement was not related to the AP story and that similar overflights had been conducted in years past. EPA officials made no mention of an upcoming enforcement sweep in the Permian when interviewed by AP last month. EPA Region 6 Administrator Earthia Nance said the Permian Basin accounts for 40% of our nation's oil supply and for years has released dangerous quantities of methane and volatile organic compounds, contributing to climate change and poor air quality. The flyovers are vital to identifying which facilities are responsible for the bulk of these emissions and therefore where reductions are most urgently needed, Nance said, according to the agency's media release. AP used 2021 data from the group Carbon Mapper to document massive amounts of methane venting into the atmosphere from oil and gas operations across the Permian, a 250-mile-wide, bone-dry expanse along the Texas-New Mexico border that a billion years ago was the bottom of a shallow sea. A partnership of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and academic researchers, Carbon Mapper used an airplane carrying an infrared spectrometer to detect and quantify the unique chemical fingerprint of methane in the atmosphere. Hundreds of sites were shown persistently spewing the gas across multiple overflights. Last October, AP journalists visited more than two dozen sites flagged as persistent methane super emitters by Carbon Mapper with a FLIR infrared camera and recorded video of large plumes of hydrocarbon gas containing methane escaping from pipeline compressors, tank batteries, flare stacks, and other production infrastructure. The Carbon Mapper data and the AP's camera work show many of the worst emitters are steadily charging Earth's atmosphere with this extra gas. Pioneer reports $2.4 billion in second quarter net income by Jake C. Piazza, The Dallas Morning News. Wall Street is in the middle of its second quarter earnings season, and Irving-based Pioneer Natural Resources is one of the latest to step up to the plate. The oil and gas company posted a net income of $2.4 billion for the quarter, dramatically more than its $380 million net income from the same time span during 2021. The company bought back $750 million worth of its shares since the end of the first quarter and has its earnings call scheduled for Wednesday. Pioneer's strong balance sheet provides the financial flexibility to return significant free cash flow to investors while still growing annual oil volumes, Chief Executive Officer Scott Sheffield said in the release. Pioneer exceeded earnings per share expectations by 6.36% with its $9.36 value per share, according to Bazinga. The company's stock took a beating early on in the pandemic and plummeted to less than $80 per share, but has since rebounded and surged to $227.91 as of the market close Tuesday. Pioneer has been active in the acquisition area recently, taking part as both a buyer and seller. The company acquired Parsley Energy and Double Point Energy before announcing the sale of its Delaware Basin oil field assets for $3.25 billion in November of last year. Diamondback reports soaring second quarter profits by Kyra Buckley, Houston Chronicle. Diamondback Energy said Tuesday that profits and revenues soared as the company continues to drill wells in the country's most productive oil basin. The company, which operates primarily in the Permian Basin in West Texas and New Mexico, reported $1.4 billion in profits during the three-month period ended June 30th, compared with $311 million in the same period last year. Revenue surged nearly 65% to $2.8 billion from $1.7 billion in the second quarter of 2021. Supply chain issues partially stemming from uneven pandemic recovery and Russia's war against Ukraine, along with inflation, have made it challenging for oil and gas producers to get needed equipment. Despite this, The Midland-based company was able to drill 48 wells in the second quarter. We continue to focus on operational excellence and cost control in this inflationary operating environment, working to mitigate and offset the persistent inflationary pressures we are seeing across our business, said Diamondback CEO Travis Stice in a statement to investors. Diamondback has a strong track record of cost control, and we expect to continue to improve on this track record in the coming quarters. The company's strong results caused the board to approve a $2 billion increase in its share repurchase program, Diamondback said, to total $4 billion in buybacks. Texas Power Grid Faces Test as Heat Bakes State, by Noreen S. Malik and Brian K. Sullivan, Bloomberg. Intensifying Texas heat is poised to test the power grid on Thursday, with demand seen topping 80 gigawatts for the first time ever. Ample winds, twirling turbines, are expected to bolster electricity supplies, reducing the threat of outages as homeowners and businesses crank up air conditioners across the second largest U.S. state, according to data from the Electric Reliability Council of Texas Incorporated. Electricity use on the grid, serving more than 26 million customers, is expected to peak at more than 81.4 gigawatts on Thursday afternoon, which would set a record for the 12th time in less than 2 months, according to data from ERCOT, as the grid operator is known. The current record of 79.8 gigawatts was set on July 20th. During the peak demand hour on Thursday, wind and other renewables will provide 22% of power supplies, ERCOT figures showed. Day-ahead electricity prices in the Dallas area soared 145% to as much as $400 a megawatt hour for Thursday afternoon. Despite assurances of sufficient power supplies, some industry participants are worried that aging generation plants that burn natural gas or coal are growing more vulnerable to breakdowns because they've been running so hard in response to ERCOT's push to maintain around-the-clock reserves. The fleet continues to be run at unprecedented levels, said Michelle Richmond, executive director of Texas Competitive Power Advocates, a generator trade group. With ERCOT's move to keep more reserves online, power plant operators will remain concerned about the increasing and ever-present stress on the fleet. Temperatures are set to soar for another day across much of Texas. The high in Dallas is forecast to reach 103 degrees Wednesday and Thursday and remain above 100 for the rest of the week, according to the National Weather Service. With humidity added in, it will feel much hotter. Austin is forecast to reach 104 Wednesday, while San Antonio comes in at 102. At Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, high temperatures have reached 100 or more 29 times since July 1st, according to the Weather Service.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Community page. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center releases new show lineup, by Mercedes Cordero. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center has announced the new shows for its 10-year anniversary concert season. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld, country music star Justin Moore, and kid favorite Co Camelon are among the shows later this fall. The lineup for August includes Food is Medicine, Robert Earl Keen, Jay Owen House, and Charlie Crockett. Here's a list of the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center show lineup. This month, Food is Medicine, Saturday. Robert Earl Keen, August 26th. Jay Owen House, August 27th. And Charlie Crockett, August 28th. New shows: George Thorogood and the Destroyers, September 14th. Co Camelon, August 5th. Jerry Seinfeld, August 15th. Jamie Johnson, October 30th. Chicago, November 1st. Justin Moore, The Country on It Tour, November 6th. A Magical Cirque Christmas, November 20th, and The Illusionists, Magic of the Holidays, December 19th. Broadway in the Basin, Jesus Christ Superstar, January 8th. My Fair Lady, February 15th. Hairspray, March 6th. Anastasia, April 2nd. And Cats, May 4th. Centennial Park to host live music Friday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Looking to get out of the house and soak up the last rays of summer, but don't want to get too sweaty? Head downtown to Centennial Park for a family-friendly dose of live music from 7 to 9 p.m. Friday. Part of the park's summer Music in the Park series, the night will showcase local dance band Brother Z, bringing a classic mix of rock and electric soul funk. The trio, made up of vocalist and guitarist Bo Zertucci, drum man Josh Goetz, and Jeremy James on vocals and bass, provide an exciting and encompassing show for all involved, so make sure to pack your dancing shoes. Mico Sinita will be located at the corner of Wall and Colorado from 5 to 10 p.m., serving up tacos and more. Make sure to take a picnic blanket, lawn chairs, and good vibes. Prohibited items include alcohol and glass containers. Dogs will not be allowed on the grass. This will be the second to last showing in the Music in the Park series, the last being August 19th. The Mavericks Players present Wedding Secrets, a wedding comedy by Joe Starzik. Remaining performances, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, August 4th, 5th, and 6th. Sunday matinee, August 7th. Evenings at 7:30, matinees at 2:30. All tickets, $10. VFW Post 4149, 409 Veterans Air Park Drive. For reservations, call 432-260-0044 or just come to the door. The Midland Roadshow is back, August 9th through 13th. Coins, jewelry, military, comics, toys, collectibles. Buying and evaluating, August 9th through August 13th, that's Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at the Baymont Inn and Suites, 3312 Fortress Drive in Midland. That's north off of I-20. For show information or directions, call 417-986-5098. Community calendar. Community events. Join fellow Midlanders and local vendors at Low Street Market's August showing Saturday. Walk the micro market strip as you shop through the art, bites, apparel, and more, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at 201 West Wall. Join Sister Doe and more than 40 other vendors in their first night market Friday at the tailgate. Admission is free for all ages, and participants can expect bumpin' beats from DJ Joel all night long. 6 to 11 p.m. Friday at 4401 North Big Spring. What better way to support Little Midlanders than with the annual Back to School Supplies Drive, hosted by Members Financial Federal Credit Union. The donation event will run through August 31st and takes contributions of all sorts. Pens, notepads, colors, you name it. 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Mondays through Fridays and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays at 3100 Sunburst Drive. Thursday will be the last day City of Midland pools are open. Doug Russell Aquatic Center at 900 North Midland Drive will be open from noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 9 p.m. Thursday. Admission is $3 per person. Children 2 and under are free. Things to do, see, and hear. Centennial Park. Music in the Park. Brother Z, Friday. The Croakin' Toads, August 19th. Midland Community Theater. Summer Mummers at the Yucca Theater, Friday and Saturday, August 12th and 13th, 19th and 20th, and 26th and 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Works of Art in the Historic Turner Mansion, Lochinvar, August 11th. Session 1, ages 4 through 7. Session 2, ages 8 through 12. Session 3, ages 13 and over. RSVP at museumsw.org/events. Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to noon, Saturdays. Windwalker Farms, Rick Smith Memorial Shoot, Friday. Blazing Targets Registered Shoot, August 14th. YMCA Clay Shoot, August 19th. Martin County Convent Clay Shoot, August 20th. Boy Scouts Clay Shoot, August 26th. Archway Outreach Clay Shoot, August 27th. At the Horseshoe, Cody Johnson Amphitheater, Thursday. West Texas Heat Jackpot, Main Arena, Saturday. Aaron Watson and Friends Birthday Bash, Amphitheater, August 20th. Midland County Fair, August 25th through 28th. Movies in the Park. Luca, August 12th at Centennial Park, 200 West Wall. Movie starts at dusk.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 4th. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux of Midland passed away on Monday, August 1st. She was born on October 5th, 1945, to Reese Lewis and Daisy Marie Place in Abbeville, Louisiana, where she was raised and educated. She married her high school sweetheart, Alfred Boudreaux, on her 18th birthday, October 5th, 1963, and together they called Abbeville their home until 1973. They raised four children, Reese Lewis Boudreaux and wife Allison, Pamela Margaret Stewart and husband Billy, Tricia Elizabeth Elliott and husband Mike, and Billy Jack Boudreaux, all of Midland. She is also survived by eight grandchildren and one great-grandchild. In 1973, her husband was transferred to Midland, where they permanently made their home. She is preceded in death by her father, Reese Lewis Place, her mother, Daisy Marie Place, brother-in-law, Frank Lewis Boudreaux, and sister-in-law, Cheryl Boudreaux. Memorial service will be held on Thursday, August 11th, at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Following the service, please join the family for a reception in the church parlor. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to St. Anne's Catholic Church, Interim Hospice, or Manor Park Vogel Center. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lola Frances Farnsworth Kerr passed away on July 26. She was born September 6, 1920, in Lipscomb County, Texas, out on a farm where she grew up. After grade school, Lola went to Wayland Baptist University, Howard Payne, and then on to Southwestern Baptist Seminary. She went from there to work at First Baptist Church in Midland for several years as the training union coordinator. Lola and her husband James were avid churchgoers at First Baptist Church in Midland. Lola is survived by daughter and son-in-law Catherine and Pat Cruz of St. Cloud, Minnesota, son Mark Kerr of Houston, Texas, son and daughter-in-law Paul Alishan Kerr of Hartsville, South Carolina, seven grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her husband James, parents Fred and Bernice Farnsworth, and eight brothers and sisters. The family will receive friends Saturday, August 6th from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A chapel service will be Saturday, August 6th at 2 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A burial will follow at 3 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home North, 6510 State Highway 349 in Midland. The family asked that, in lieu of flowers, the donations be made to First Baptist Church. Benjamin Cooper Hunt was born September 25, 1982, and passed away on July 16th of this year at the age of 39. Ben was preceded in death by his grandfather, Kenneth E. Hunt, Jr., on June 9th of this year. Ben is survived by his grandmother, Jeannie Hunt, by his mother, Marilyn Hunt, his aunt, Sharon McLean, his brother, Rensselaer Hunt, and his daughter, Grace Ainsley Sherry. Ben spent most of his childhood in Greenwood, where he attended both St. Anne's Catholic Church and Greenwood ISD, where he graduated from high school. Ben was raised in the Catholic tradition at St. Anne's Catholic Church by his grandparents. While Ben's death was due to a heart condition, his heart was full of love and kindness for those around him. Ben will be missed by all who knew him and loved him. His funeral will be held at Christ Church Anglican at 5501 North Midkiff Road in Midland on Friday, August 5th at 10 a.m.
This is the Odessa American for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. County makes ARPA decisions, MCH and no-go, water improvements, volunteer fire departments receive most money, by Royal McGregor. During Wednesday's budget meeting, the Ector County Commissioner's Court discussed and allocated funds provided by the American Rescue Plan Act. The commissioners approved allocations, which will mainly fund water districts and volunteer fire departments, of a little more than $20 million with a vote of 4-1. The breakdown of funds include $10 million for the Ector County Utility District, $4.5 million to Greater Gardendale Water, $1.94 million to the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department and South Ector County Volunteer Fire Department, and $900,000 for Gardendale Volunteer Fire Department and Goldsmith Volunteer Fire Department. The Odessa American previously reported the Commissioner's Court reimbursed the county $10 million, which is the maximum allowable, according to the Treasury, for counties of this size, and about $1 million has been used for IT improvements in the courthouse. Mike Gardner, the Commissioner for Precinct 1, addressed the ARPA funds allocated after the budget meetings ended. "I represent the people of Precinct 1, and I look at that need, and does Precinct 1 come out better in this deal than any place? It sure does," Gardner said. "We're going to put about $12 million of that money out there." The lone dissenting vote came from Armando Rodriguez, the lame duck commissioner for Precinct 4. He explained during the meeting that he voted against the allocation as he believed ARPA funds should have been discussed publicly. "The only reason I'm going to vote against it is because I think we should give the courtesy to the public to give their opinion," Rodriguez said during the meeting. The Odessa American asked Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes whether the allocation vote should have taken place during Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting. "We addressed it Wednesday because it's part of our budget and being able to move forward with those monies, so it's best distributed to those that will benefit a majority of the people in the county," Hayes said. I cannot think of a better way to spend that money that will create jobs, improve infrastructure, and save lives. GOP County Judge-elect Dustin Fawcett addressed the Commissioner's Court that ARPA funds are a unique bucket for long-term investments, and he's wary of large allocations of money. If we get rid of all this money now, we are doing ourselves a disservice for long-term planning due to the short-term needs, Fawcett said as he addressed the court. According to a document drafted by Hayes, an agency receiving ARPA funds of more than $1 million needs to provide a financial statement and recent audit report. The Commissioner's Court has until 2026 to distribute the more than $20 million. The Odessa American previously reported that Medical Center Hospital requested $7 million for staffing and supplies. The hospital didn't receive any ARPA funds. Commissioners also heard from the county attorney, environmental enforcement, medical examiner's office, and library. The commissioners also approved when to pay out a cost of living adjustment. The county's COLA is scheduled to be paid out the first paycheck in November, while the longevity payment will be the first paycheck in December. To be eligible for COLA, a person must be employed by the county before the start of the new fiscal year, which is October 1st. Wednesday's budget talks kicked off with the county attorney's office, which had been acting as an office of one for the last year, has been approved to hire two employees. County Attorney Lee McClendon has been okayed to hire an assistant county attorney and an administrative assistant. Commissioners then spoke with Ricky George, the director of Ector County Environmental Enforcement and Ector County Emergency Management Coordinator, who asked the commissioners for a roll-off truck that would cost $200,000. Hayes suggested the commissioners ask companies that have been approved for recent tax abatements. However, the most time spent during environmental enforcement budget talks was when George petitioned the commissioners to increase the pay for three of the four environmental investigators. George and Gardner offered to give up their 4% increase in COLA bonuses to those raises. The motion, which was initiated by Gardner and seconded by Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez, failed 3-2. The proposed budget was approved 3-2. Gardner said he believes environmental enforcement doesn't receive fair treatment. He also said he wasn't going to accept the pay increase anyway. Environmental enforcement is so much about my area, Gardner said. You go back as far as when my dad was county commissioner. He started this deal. He was the one who got this started because he saw the need. There wasn't law enforcement agencies going out and enforcing a law of illegal dumping. In order to curb that and turn it around, this group was formed. I want to support them. Ron Inge, the chief investigator for the medical examiner's office, explained to the commissioners that Ector County's autopsies are going through Texas Panhandle Forensics. Inge said that those results are taking 3 to 4 weeks instead of 3 to 4 months when the medical examiner's office used South Plains Forensic Pathology. This is from the Odessa American, August 4th, 2022. OHS Band Looking Forward to New Year by Ruth Campbell. Brand new Odessa High School band director Sonia Campos is hoping for a successful year. Having started practice July 25th, Campos said she has 150 students so far. Summer band will end Monday with a 13-hour day. The OHS band goes through its paces in the parking lot of the Ector County ISD School Nutrition Department. We're really excited that the kids are really buying into the system and they're really committing themselves to showing up and just really pushing themselves to get themselves better each and every rep, Campos said. I'm really excited just to have the commitment level of the students. As a new director, you always fear that. That's something that you always have in the back of your head, but it's definitely been a positive experience so far. We're just excited to showcase them here pretty quick, she added. Campos replaces John Mayo, who is now retired. Jimmy Alagi, assistant band director and percussion instructor, has stayed on the staff, and Eric Montgomery, a Kentucky native, has been added. He's really bringing a lot to the table. He's been part of some marching band groups in the past, and we're really excited to see what he can bring to us in West Texas, Campos said. This is Campos's first year directing a high school band. She was previously at Crockett Middle School. Their theme this year is Red, a Latin tour around the world. It's just different, the whole marching band aspect, of course, but it's more about dealing with older students. They're really not that much different than middle school students. They want a lot of guidance, they want a lot of support, and I'm willing to give that to them, so I'm excited to see what we can make happen, Campos added. She said that she's expecting 50 to 100 students to join once the school year starts. A lot of our students travel during this time, and coming on as a new director, I didn't have a lot of time to send out information or have contact information for all our students. I think next school year, we're definitely going to see an increase in our summer band numbers. I'm really excited about that because we just need everybody here to learn what we have to learn together, Campos said. OHS's first football game is at home August 26 versus Lubbock Monterey. We still have time to get ourselves adjusted, acquainted, and meet each other and start trusting each other. You have to build those relationships, and we've been doing that quite well. Our students, like I said, have been working their butts off. They're trying to soak in all the new information, and they're really buying into the new form of marching. We're doing straight leg marching this school year. The kids are really learning, especially my upperclassmen that are used to something different. They've really come on board and are really buying into the system. So we're really excited about that. We're building fundamentals quite a bit right now, and it's definitely paying dividends because our sound is continuously getting bigger and bigger, she added. With straight leg marching, you shouldn't see any bent legs going as the musicians move forward, Campos said. We're really excited to bring that to the table. It's just a different form, and it's something that's being used widely across the state of Texas in competitive marching bands, she added. This is a state competition year for OHS. State is always something that all bands want to go for. My philosophy is to build the whole student through music education. If we do our job here in every practice, we should be rewarded with really great opportunities, and we're hoping that state will be one of those, she added. 17-year-old senior Aaron Ramirez is a drum major. He has been in band since sixth grade. I really enjoy being in my leadership position. I like to help people, and I like seeing what's going on, seeing a problem that we have in the band and being able to fix it, Ramirez said. He added that there is a lot of change in the group this year, but a lot of it is good change. I really think we're going to improve a lot this year, and a lot of those changes are for the better, Ramirez said. He added that he feels the band will get better as the year goes on. Diane Sogato, a 17-year-old senior, is the section leader for trumpets. She has been in band for 7 years. Sogato said she feels Campos is a good motivator. We're definitely a lot smaller in numbers than the past couple of years, but the quantity doesn't matter. It's more the quality of the band, she said. Creating bonds with her section is one of the things she enjoys about band, but the games are one of my favorite things ever. I like being busy, so having that distraction for me is something really amazing for me, Salgado said. Odessa American, Thursday, August 4th, 2022, Quick Hits. Back to School Bash. Altitude Trampoline Park, 5161 East 42nd Street, has scheduled a back-to-school bash all day today. Bring in at least one school supply and receive an extra 30 minutes of jump time for free added on to an already purchased jump pass. All school supplies brought in will be donated to local schools. Visit altitudeodessa.com/buy-a-pass or tinyurl.com/UXMZYCCV. Storytime. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tex.us. Back to School Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a back-to-school COVID-19 vaccine clinic for ages 6 months and older from 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. each Thursday throughout August and September. Visit tinyurl.com/54TSK5SK. Concert. Cody Johnson is scheduled to perform at 7:30 p.m. today at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Visit midlandhorseshoe.com. Country Dance Night. The Permian Basin Dance Club has scheduled a country dance night for ages 30 and older with Honky Tonk Posse from 7:30 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. today at the American Legion, 2701 East 8th Street. Cost is $8 for members and $10 for guests. Annual membership fee is $20. pbdanceclub@gmail.com or visit pddanceclub.com on the PBDC Facebook page. Midland Art Crawl. The Midland Art Crawl, powered by Midland AF, announces a call for local artists for the second quarterly art crawl from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. September 2nd across several venues in Midland. An application is required for participation, but is valid for the rest of the year. Deadline for participation as an artist for September's art crawl is August 19th. The dates take place on the first Fridays on a quarterly basis, September 2nd and December 2nd. The family-friendly event is open to the public. Sponsorship opportunities are available. tinyurl.com/45TSJBPK or midland-artcrawl.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.